Marba l-semija ta' Campus 103.7, Emmanuel Buttigieg bi pjaċir jilqakom għal l-ewwel episodju ta' 9 serje ta' Taħdita Clio. Żmien għaddej hawnhekk ukoll. Illum inserta li ħankun jiena biss bħala l-host ta' dan l-episodju partikolari, però m'inhiex waħdi għax bħala mistiedna bi pjaċir ħafna għandi miegħi lil Marja Pija Arana Barbier. Marja Pija biex nintroduċiha ftit hija gradwata tal-istorja mill-Università ta' Malta, fej fil-fatina sirt nafa, kienet studenta tiegħi wkoll. Kisbet MA fl-Istorja Kontemporanja mill-Universitat Complutense de Madrid u MA fl-Istorja Moderna mill-Universitat Autonoma de Madrid. Palissa għada segwi l-studi dottorali tagħha fl-Universitat de Salamanca, naturalment fl-Spanja, u r-ċerka tagħha tiffoka fuq relazzjonijiet bejn il-Monarkija Spanjola u l-Ordni ta' San Juan fis-seklu 18. Kontribwixxiet studi li deru fil-ġurnal Storja u tattendi diversi konferenzi internazzjonali. Hija wkoll membru ta' grupp ta' riċerka blisem ta' The Spanish Monarchy's Intercultural Diplomacy in the Mediterranean, organizzat mill-Institute of History of the Spanish Research Council. U dal-episodju ħajkun bl-Ingliż. Marja Pija, a warm welcome to our program. It's a real pleasure to have you here.
First of all, thank you very much for the invite. It's a pleasure to be here today to discuss my research.
Excellent. So in the introduction, I've explained that at the moment you're pursuing your PhD in Spain at Salamanca, which is a lovely venue. And broadly speaking, you have this very interesting subject, which is Spain, Spanish monarchy, and the Order of St. John, Malta, in the 18th century. Now, I would imagine many of our listeners are at least broadly familiar with the fact that there's a long history between Spain and Malta. In the 18th century, there's obviously also the relationship with France, increasingly also the relationship with England, Britain. So there's many players here. You've chosen to focus on Spain and Malta. So how did this begin for you? How did this particular journey begin for you?
First of all, I would like to emphasize one key word here, which is the word broad. As you may be aware, I am focusing on the 18th century. I mean, we're talking about 100 years of history almost, which is a very long timeline. And it's also sometimes a bit difficult as well when you have a very long timeline to focus on a specific topic.
Yeah.
But, I started focusing on Spain and Malta when I was doing my bachelor's degree, not many years ago.
No, you're very young.
Yes. I'm not going to specify how many, but not many. And I focused on the relations between Spain and the Order of St. John during the last years of the Order's presence in Malta, more specifically the year 1796 and 1797.
Right.
I arrived to this topic when I started doing research at the National Library, and I found a series of correspondence between the Order's receivers in Madrid and Valladolid with the Lords of the Common Treasury.
Right.
Now, normally these sources you would expect to be more of an economic nature, in the sense that the receivers were, you know, trusted with this role of managing the responses. But something that caught my attention was that they were very informative, not just on the economic aspect of the, you know, of the commanderies, but also they were very informative about what was happening outside of Malta,
right,
and how those Mediterranean or European events were affecting either their jobs or also the situation in Malta. And I started questioning to what extent these events were really influencing Malta's history. We need to keep in mind that when we study the Order, we're not focusing on the Order on its own. Mm-hmm. It's not an entity or a territory in isolation. And this doesn't just apply to Malta and the other region. This applies to anything in history. Uh-huh. We need to look at the broader context. Decisions being made here were not just made here for the sake of, someone else's random decision.
Yeah.
They were the result of things happening outside. So at first, I decided to focus on the last years of the order, but then eventually I found more sources, not just the correspondence of the receivers, but also the correspondence of ambassadors. Mm-hmm. And I started to delve deeper into this diplomatic network that was established between the order and Spain.
Right. So I know I'm thinking a bit off script here, but you've mentioned sources, so I'd like to pursue that first a little bit. You've already mentioned the National Library in Valletta, so the correspondence of these receivers from Spain to the treasury here, and you've mentioned the ambassadors. So where are you carrying out your research? And okay, we're talking of letters, but maybe you tell us a little bit more of what these letters look like and so on. So let's start with the where. Where do you do your research?
Well, I'm glad that you're asking this question, actually, because one of the things that I like to emphasize about my research is that I am not just looking at archives here in Malta, and I'm not just looking at archives in Spain, which is something that I have been finding recently. I mean, there aren't a lot of studies about relations between the order and Spain, mm-hmm. and even less in the 18th century. And Maltese historians focus on the sources we have here, which is only natural. We have a very broad collection, mm-hmm. more than enough to mm-hmm. cover, I don't know how many dissertations.
I'm sure.
Yes. And the same for Spanish historians. I am trying to look at different archives. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the National Library here has a very rich collection. I wish I could stay longer to look at everything, but unfortunately...
Yep. Time is always an enemy.
Yes. But there are also archives in Spain. For example, the National Archives mm-hmm. of Spain in Madrid.
In Madrid.
We also have the General Archives of Simancas. Mm-hmm. Which is it's a very old archive, a beautiful building right in the outskirts of Valladolid, and they also have a very rich collection generally, but they also have a collection on these letters of these correspondence between the ambassadors and the grand masters and any other Spanish agents, and I think it's important to combine all of these sources, not just to get one-sided perspective. And one would be surprised about how many sources there are at the National Archives in Madrid. Not just letters and correspondence, but also accounts, anything related to commanderies, to the administration of the lands. We also have the archives of the Royal Palace. Mm. I mean, one of the grand priors of the prior of Castile was an infante, one the son of Charles III. And wow. He had his own archives as well, mostly related to commanderies, but there were also documents, decrees, minutes, also related to this diplomatic network.
Yeah. Because one thing that perhaps we don't always emphasize enough in relation to the order is the Order of St. John is how many layers, it's like a big sponge cake almost, no? That you can slice through, and you could focus on the lands, the commanderies, you could focus on trade, you could focus on the military, you could focus on religion. And I'm sure all of these are on your radar somehow. Of course, the challenge is always, what do you actually focus on and what perhaps do you leave for a later stage in your life? So any indication where you are going at the moment or where you think you'll go, which areas you might focus on more than others perhaps?
Well, it's that's a very good observation in the sense that the order has multiple layers. Not just when it comes to different approaches, but also the institution itself. I mean, look, you have the convent here in Malta, but then you also have the Langs, you have the priors, you have the commanderies. That all forms part of the order. And personally, for the time being, I am focusing solely on the Spanish diplomatic network.
Mm-hmm.
So when I study the 18th century, I'm looking at the ambassadors and also at the receivers, how, like, what role they played, because they sometimes they played a significant role when it came to diplomacy.
Mm.
It was not just on the economic aspect. I mean, that I have found instances in which the Grand Master writes to a receiver to ask for help when there was a pressuring matter.
Right.
So it wasn't just, the ambassador was the main one, but he was not the only one.
So we've mentioned these individuals, the receivers, a number of times already. Can we explain a bit more who they were and what their role was meant to be and how they went off script as well?
Yes. Well, as the listeners may know, the Order of St. John had territories all over Europe. Now, these territories, the smallest unit of administration of the order was called the commandery.
Mm-hmm.
And these commanderies were a very rich source of income for the order.
Yeah.
They had to pay rent, and these rents had to be transferred to the common treasury. Now, the person in charge of handling and accumulating these rents was the receiver, and the order had approximately 8 receivers in Spain. Madrid, okay. Valladolid, Valencia, Barcelona, Zaragoza, Mallorca.
Mm. So 8 very important individuals.
Yes, very mm-hmm. important.
And aside from carrying out this economic job, as you've been saying, they're also dealing with other matters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They liaise with the ambassador in Madrid.
Yes.
But also directly with Malta.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So obviously they are important individuals.
Yes, they're very important. I mean, when we look at the diplomatic network, it's not very simple in the sense that you have 2 governments and you have ambassadors.
Mm.
It goes beyond that. It's like a spider web, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it moves in different directions.
And Spain has an ambassador in Malta at this point, or some kind of representative?
Some kind of representative. It was not called an ambassador,
mm-hmm.
but he was called, he was the one in charge of the king's business or interests
right.
here in Malta.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. The king's men.
Yes.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. In Italian, it's often, the term is often l'uomo. No?
Yes.
Of del principe or whatever. So that's the king.
Yes.
The king.
There's actually a term in French, but my accent is terrible and I don't want to offend anyone.
Fair enough. looking at the time frame, so we're saying 18th century, it's a very full century. And if we just look at the extremities, so it starts with this great clash, the war of the Spanish succession. So obviously
yes.
Spain is the protagonist. And the century ends with the French Revolution, the Revolutionary Wars, Napoleon and all of that. Are you going to look into these two tail ends, as it were? How important are they in your formulation?
They are incredibly important. Let's start with the War of Spanish Succession, mm-hmm. because that is a very, very important event.
Yep.
Not just for Malta, but I mean for Europe.
But for
history.
Europe, yes.
And
the world,
history.
Effectively. So that's 1702, 1714.
Yes, approximately. So we have a major dispute between the Bourbons and the Habsburgs for the accession of the Spanish throne.
Mm-hmm. Because the last Spanish king,
Carlos II.
Second. He died without children. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's the question of who gets to inherit Spain and her empire.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a very interesting event, in a sense that even before Charles II passed away, they were already preparing for such a dispute.
Yes, because they knew it was going to happen.
Yes. So, obviously, when it happened, they found out, actually, that Charles II left an inheritance.
Right.
And he left the Spanish throne to Philip V, who was the Louis XIV's youngest grandson.
Mm-hmm.
And this affected the order directly, actually, because the order was a fief of the King of the Two Sicilies.
Yep.
Right? Now, we have to keep in mind that the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies was under the Spanish monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
So until that point, things were quite simple in a way, in a sense that the order was a fief of the, well, they were they had Malta as a fief, and they owed this tribute to the Spanish king. And eventually, there is this disruption, because following the end of the War of Spanish Succession, what happens is that that Spain loses Sicily.
Yeah.
And we have a change of dynasty. So now for a short period, we have the House of Savoy in Sicily.
Yeah. And that wasn't a very happy relationship between Malta and Sicily at that point. No.
No. There was actually a lot of trouble. I mean, keep in mind that when you have a change of dynasty, you also need to build relations from scratch with the person. And this person may not be very happy about it either.
Yeah, yeah.
So they may not be willing to contribute. And eventually, obviously, Spain was not happy about losing Sicily. I mean, nobody's happy about losing anything, really.
Especially because when you think about it, the relationship between Spain and Sicily was very old.
Yes.
I mean, hundreds of years now. So you were like cutting off someone's arm, no? That's how it must have felt. So
yes. And
so although you have a new king on the Spanish throne, I'm sure that the old Spanish establishment, which is still there, would have been influencing him, saying, you know, look what we've lost.
Yes.
And if you're our king, you would get it back.
Definitely. And between 1718 and 1720, there were actually attempts by the Spanish monarchy to reacquire Sicily.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, there was a point when the Spanish king had managed to reconquer most of the island of Sicily. But technically, it was still under the House of Savoy.
Yeah.
Now, what happens to the Order of St. John? On the one hand, they owe loyalty to the rightful ruler of Sicily. But then again, you don't want to offend one of your biggest patrons and also one of the greatest monarchies in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a bit of a clash in that sense, because obviously the Order of St. John had to pay a yearly tribute.
Mm-hmm, the famous falcon.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, who do they give it to?
Yes. Send two.
Yeah. Because obviously by sending one to one party, you're offending the other.
Mm-hmm.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
So actually they had to refrain from doing it.
Okay.
They said, we're not doing it for now.
We're keeping the falcon.
Yes, we're keeping the falcon. So yes, and eventually then we have another change of dynasty in Sicily. We have Charles VI, the Habsburg Emperor, and that is also another clash, because the relations between the Bourbons of Spain and the Habsburgs were still not, you know, friendly,
tense,
to put it that way.
Uh-huh.
So obviously, Spain being one of the greatest patrons, together with France, of the order, you try to respect that loyalty and that agreement that you have, but without offending your patrons as well. So there was also those were difficult years as well between Spain and the order. There were a lot of the diplomatic issues as well, because even during the war, and actually even after the war, there were many incidents in which Malta received warships from different parties, and technically, according to the cession of Malta, the order was not allowed to receive warships from any enemies of
Spain.
Of the King of the Two Sicilies, which in this case was someone else now.
Now, yes.
So those were very turbulent years. The order had to play its cards well. And those years were particularly difficult for relations between Spain and Malta.
Mm. Now let's jump to the end of the century.
Mm-hmm.
The French Revolution, the Republic, Napoleon. So the end of the monarchy in France. Spain, I know, has itself, the Spanish wants to navigate this odd part where kind of doesn't want to offend France, but at the same time, on principle, of course, they are completely opposed. How does that play out and how does that impact the order in Malta?
Those were very difficult years as well. Yes, we're jumping to the other extreme now. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about a period in which the relations between Spain and Malta were, you know, in a good place, to put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
They were strengthening. And this started in the 1780s. There was cooperation between Spain and Malta, not just naval expeditions, but also we have to keep in mind that during these years, Spain was establishing commercial relations with North African regencies, and he saw the Grand Master's help.
Right.
All right. So there were actually several trades of slaves, and this was mostly to suit Spain's commercial interests, and the order had to accept. Again, you don't want to offend one of your biggest patrons.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about a period in which they're doing kind of okay. The relationship is strengthening. But what happens in the 90s? We have the French Revolution and its effects. Now, following the end of the monarchy in France, we start seeing these wars in Europe. Obviously, the Bourbons in Spain are against the abolition of the monarchy in France. And they wage war on the Republic. Now, the Order of St. John supports Spain on their endeavor.
Sure.
And this continues until 1795. Because what happens? Spain is no longer in the economic conditions to maintain such war.
Mm.
If they don't want to keep suffering any further, economically and even socially speaking, I mean, we are talking about a population which is tired of war and they're seeing, you know, they're suffering the grievances. There's a lot of pressure from within. They signed the Peace Treaty of Basel in 1795. That is a huge turn of events here because now we start to see cooperation between France and Spain.
Right. They become friends.
They become very good friends. So the complete opposite of what we had before. And obviously this affects the order as well.
Sure.
Because they were supporting Spain.
Against France.
Against France. And now the order is partly isolated in a way. I mean, we also need to understand that the new government in France was not in favor of nobility.
No, of course.
So, and obviously we know what the Order of St. John stands for and where the knights come from. They come from noble families. And, well, we also need to keep in mind that eventually the French government wants to expand further. Well, now we already see the Napoleon coming into the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to invade Egypt. Now, a very good way to get to Egypt from Europe is to acquire
Malta.
Yes. A strategic base point in the Mediterranean, which, yes, is Malta. And then we have the role of Spain. So Spain starts to impose several economic measures on the order, which kind of works two ways in the sense that it helps them to recover from that economic, from those economic losses that they suffered during the war against France, and also as you know, to please the new French government. Like, okay, we're imposing a lot of hardships on this order based on nobility, and eventually, we see that the order starts to struggle even more financially speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And there was eventually the invasion of Malta, Napoleon's invasion of Malta. But what we don't usually see is how Spain played a role in this entire diplomatic network.
Yeah, it's a side story that's often missed.
Exactly. I mean, what we get is Napoleon came to Malta, he wanted Egypt. makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't know is, first of all, this was being planned beforehand, and also that Napoleon's and the government, the French government's strategy was to also take over the Order of St. John.
Mm.
And actually, one of their moves was going to be to offer the Grand Mastership of the Order to Manuel Godoy, who was the Prime Minister
of Spain's
government. Now, why was it important to offer the Grand Mastership to Godoy? Because Spain had virtually become a puppet of France, and then France could, you know, manipulate the Spanish government to its own interests.
Amazing. Well, time has literally flown. It's been a very fascinating conversation, Maria Pia. Once again, I thank you for joining us. And I'm sure our listeners will look forward to having you again in the future as you progress with your PhD to hear more about your studies and the discoveries that you will bring to us. Emanuel Buttigieġ fi Semlijim Gawċi, jirringrazzja s-semija ta' Campus 103.7 u nistedinkom biex terġgħu tkunu magħna il-ġimgħa d-dieħla.